Welcome to Open Minded Healing, where the topic is alternative health. We will be having conversations with the practitioners that offer a variety of alternative healing modalities, as well as everyday people who have recovered their health outside of the MD's office. Join us with an open mind for conversations that may provide solutions to healing your own body on a mental, physical, and spiritual level. I'm Marla Miller. Let's begin. Welcome back to Open Minded Healing. Today's discussion centers around the topic of psilocybin and how it can be used therapeutically to help people heal and evolve further. My guest today is Dr. Jennifer Joss. Jennifer's formal education includes a PhD in counseling psychology from Stanford School of Education and a BA from Harvard University with high honors in psychology. She also holds a certificate in psychedelic-assisted therapy from the Integrative Psychiatry Institute in Boulder, Colorado. In addition, she has completed numerous Enneagram trainings over a 30-year process of study and is currently working her way through levels of training and energy work that augments the rest of her practice. Jennifer helps you evolve into more of who you are by connecting disparate parts within you and building bridges between yourself and others to help you contribute to the world in unique and fulfilling ways. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you for having me, Marla. It's a pleasure to be here.
This topic is very exciting. I know it is for me, I'm sure for others, to really delve more into this and figure out what does psilocybin actually do for people and how can it help them in a therapeutic way. Let's start by explaining what psilocybin is in its most natural form.
Sure. Psilocybin is a metabolite produced by numerous species of mushrooms. They grow in different parts of the world. They've been used for centuries by ancient people and indigenous cultures for religious ceremonies and healing rituals. And actually, even before recorded history, we have images of rock art of mushrooms on caves in Spain, Algeria, 10,000 BC in Australia, so there's some thought that mushrooms and psilocybin and what they enable people to do have been at the cornerstone of civilization for many, many years.
So we're not just talking about one particular mushroom. It's found in a variety of mushrooms, right?
Right. Not every mushroom has the psychedelic or psilocybin metabolite. You don't buy them in the grocery store, but also there are different species of mushrooms from which psilocybin is derived. And when psilocybin is broke down by the body, what becomes bioavailable is called psilocin. That would be the active ingredient in psilocybin that is described in the research being done today in mental health and on psilocybin.
Well, let's talk about how this particular type of mushroom that has psilocybin, how it acts in nature versus how it works on human brains.
Yeah, well, I think it might be important to say first that psilocybin is considered a Schedule I substance by the federal government, meaning it's illegal in most places. But I live in Oregon and a particular county in Oregon where psilocybin has been decriminalized for personal use and approved for use in specified places called service centers with a licensed facilitator of psilocybin services so that people can avail themselves of the opportunities to heal and explore more of who they are through psilocybin. It's one of a few psychedelic substances that are being researched all over the world quite madly right now. So anyways, I thought maybe that should make that clear. Don't try this at home kind of thing.
Well, speaking of the legality of it, how did you come to be one of those facilitators? What kind of process did you have to go through?
I attended a training program, the Integrative Psychiatry Institute. I think I started in 2022. Just a bit of inspiration that I had. I had a long interest in non-ordinary states of consciousness and their ability to promote both healing and human potential. And so I started that, and it was about a 9-month program. We studied the application of psilocybin, MDMA, and ketamine, which is illegal. It's not actually a psychedelic, but it acts like one in some sense. And then during that time, Oregon passed these measures that allowed for the legal use of it. But actually, it's really, you know, brand new. It took a while from the time that the measures were passed for people to open what we call service centers. And the first ones were opened in Oregon mid-2023. The service center where I work here in Ashland, Omnia Group Ashland, opened its doors and saw its first client just September 2023. And they are one of the first. And not every county approved the measure, right? The counties were given an opportunity to reject them. So there's maybe about five counties in Oregon where you can find a service center. And then there are these individuals who studied, passed the training requirements from the school. And then we also had to fulfill additional requirements that the Oregon Health Authority established, an exam that they created, and know all the rules and regulations and adhere to them to get this licensed status to be able to facilitate or sit with and support people who have come to the service center to use psilocybin.
So within Oregon, their specific counties, they had a choice whether they wanted to allow this or not.
Many counties rejected it. They said they didn't want it in their area, probably not knowing so much about how these substances are being used and studied in medical research nowadays.
And then every state is different as well, I'm sure, right?
Oregon is the only place really where there's a state level measure. So people are coming from all over to Omnia and to our county and to have this opportunity. Some of the people I've seen come from the East Coast, Midwest, they've been waiting for years for a legal opportunity to help them deal with treatment-resistant depression, anxiety, and other things that they've been struggling with.
It'll be interesting to see how it catches on once people become more educated around it.
Right. Colorado is on the way to having a similar measure or law passed. California, Washington, Vermont. Everybody's watching, I think. One of the reasons I really love Omnia Group is because they're super dedicated and rigorous about doing everything well and ethically sound and putting safety first and supporting people and supporting us as facilitators. We kind of work together and support each other there, which is pretty neat.
Well, I definitely want to get into the details about safety and the process and preparation for it. But before we do that, what would be some reasons why people would want to do this? You did mention resistant PTSD, depression, and I think you said anxiety. Are there other reasons why people would want to do this in the office setting like this?
Sure. There are a range of conditions that have been studied in the research. Probably the most common one you read about is major depression, major depressive disorder, anxiety. Being studied for PTSD, as you said, MDMA is the other substance that's been very, very effective at helping people literally heal or no longer qualify for the PTSD diagnosis, which is like phenomenal. But psilocybin is being studied for alcohol use disorder, for fibromyalgia, for dementia, for premenstrual dysphoric disorder, for OCD, for eating disorders, for migraine, for traumatic brain injury, for chronic pain. There's a lot of research going on all over the world. The application of psychedelic substances to assist mental health needs. I mean, we've had whatever 30, 40 years of the dominance of psychiatry, and we're kind of running up against the limitations of modern psychiatry and psychology in some respects to make a difference. So that's a big reason, mental health and also physical health, if you're looking at traumatic brain injury or chronic pain and things like that. But people also come to do it for sort of guidance. Maybe they might be turning 50 or 60 or 40 or whatever, you know, just people at a particular juncture where they're looking to access some inner wisdom and remember more of who they are. We get busy with life and trying to make a living, and people kind of wake up and go like, well, what else is there? And so oftentimes people are coming to explore their inner wisdom. We talk about something called an inner healing intelligence quite often in the study of psychedelics. What that means is that when we're in a significant experience with these medicines, there's something that emerges, some aspect of you that seems to emerge to both guide the journey and help you just know things about yourself, about your past, about your future. Now, do you need psilocybin to access your inner wisdom, inner healing intelligence? No, but for a lot of us, that voice has been clouded over by all sorts of other demands in our life. So that's another reason a common name for these substances is entheogens, which literally means generating the divine within, right? And the Mazatec peoples who really helped introduce these medicines into the Western world called them God's flesh. And way back to the Eleusinian mysteries and the very early use of psychedelic substances, there have been this idea that we can not only heal on a human level, but there's this possibility for transpersonal, transcendent, or mystical experience. Which kind of makes sense when you know a little bit about how the mushroom works.
Maybe we can get into how the mushrooms work out in nature and then how they work with the brain or the human.
Yeah, so it's a nice way to think about it, Marla. We can talk about it at the neuroscience level. We can talk about it at the psychological level. Like, what does that mean for you? And then we can talk more about a symbolic or mythical application of it in some sense. So maybe all of those are relevant, but I think we're still figuring out the neuroscience, and this isn't my discipline, so I may not get it all right. But from a neuroscience perspective, there's a few hypotheses. You know, one thing we do know is it acts on serotonin receptors. Serotonin is related to mood and all sorts of regulation of sleep and things like that. It also seems to augment glutamate and something called brain-derived neurotropic factor. These are things that contribute to neuroplasticity, meaning literally generating new connections between neurons and dendrites. And why is that important? Because from a psychological standpoint, as we grow into people, we develop what's called an ego structure in psychology, like a personality. And that personality gets kind of fixed. You know, it's made of fixed patterns of belief, fixed patterns of feelings and ways of being in the world that kind of worked for us. And they worked for us because they helped us both thrive and maybe survive when we were young. So when you explore some personality typing like the Enneagram, what it's showing you is this pattern that's most common for you. And it's a defensive structure in some sense, meaning we developed it to be okay. But that can become rigidified. So the usefulness of some of these, like the Enneagram, is to show us that we think we're free, but we have a lot of the same thought patterns and they don't always work so well for us. And so what psilocybin does is kind of one hypothesis is that it actually kind of constructs the ego. It takes us beyond what we call the default mode network, which is probably in neuroscience the closest thing to an ego structure, right? It's a network in our brain that keeps us thinking in the same ways about ourselves. And so one of the problems in depression is people's beliefs about themselves can be pretty negative. They can get pretty catastrophic. And those are just continual thoughts, and they make these grooves in our brain, literal grooves. They become a neuronal superhighway. And so what the psilocybin does is it creates a state of connectedness all across the brain, a state of entropy. It's called the entropic brain hypothesis, the way that works. And why is that important is because when you make all these connections, what does entropy mean? It's chaos, right? But chaos is like a new fallen snow. It's like rebooting the system. And then once there's a new fallen snow, we can have insights and we can start skiing down new pathways. And because now neuroplasticity, that ability to make new dendrites, is being augmented by the psilocybin, what's happening in our brain can help embed the learning and help create new pathways that help us then step out of the rigidified personality patterns that have been controlling us for a long time. We could also look at the transpersonal component and why that same process might lead to more mystical or higher order experiences.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that for sure.
Yeah, so I think it's super interesting to consider this entropic brain hypothesis, to consider what the mushrooms do in the forest. You know, it's like sending these roots down into the forest, these mycelial networks, and they connect everything, right? So it's the same idea, this massive connectivity. Well, what happens when everything's massively connected is there's no longer a sense of I'm a separate identity. I know you're a Joe Dispenza kind of some Joe Dispenza meditation. He talks about this as getting to that place when we're no one, nowhere, nobody, no place, no time. When we're nothing, we're simultaneously everything, if that makes sense. It's a very old idea in our wisdom traditions that emptiness is not empty, it's fullness, right? Shunyata, So once we're fully connected, this chaos, similarly, it's a Greek word for void, the void from which all of creation emerges. There was darkness over the deep and everything was null and void, and let there be light. So we create this void, this state of new fallen snow, and that creates a kind of situation where we're no longer fragmented in these pieces that are kind of polarized. We're actually interconnected in a way that all these things are speaking. From that point, now when we are more one, we can connect with the one. In natural systems, anytime a system becomes more connected, it becomes more coherent. When it becomes more coherent, it becomes a higher frequency operating. And once it becomes more coherent and higher frequency, we see what are called emergent properties, meaning something arises that's a higher order understanding that out of the seeming chaos comes new life. Let there be light, right? There's a higher order experience, which manifests as kind of an insight or an aha or a sense of connecting with something greater than myself, whether that's meeting an ancestor or just a sense of your own higher self or soul guiding you. It's something of a different order, of a different level of understanding.
And so it's almost like you have such a limited view of things when you're fragmented. You're just focused, I guess, on your ego and staying safe or staying comfortable or whatever it is. But then when you get into this altered state and you connect with everything, you have such a bigger perspective. You see the whole and feel it all, I would imagine, and getting this insight that you couldn't possibly have within just your own mind.
Right. And so you've probably experienced that in the meditations. You know, anything that takes us out of that default mode network helps hook us up with greater intelligence. We live in a unified field. Energy and information is what we are.
Yeah.
So we're not so crunched down into this little funnel of this is the way I think and feel as an individual. We are more resonant with that energy and information. We start to resonate actually electromagnetically at some of the same level as the lowest level of the Earth's electromagnetic resonance. So we do get more not only intraconnected, but interconnected, which is probably why ancient people used these in ceremonies that connected the whole entire community, right? And so we get more connected with transcendent or transpersonal phenomena. Because when we're nobody, nowhere, no time, we're in the present, we're in the timeless, which is kind of like the meaning of the cross. There's this, both the horizontal and the vertical potential for growth. And so we see a lot of this kind of reaching into the vertical, the transpersonal, the mystical, or just something beyond our ordinary perception. And most people find that an incredibly healing or inspiring part of the process. Does it happen for everybody? No. You know, we can never really predict what's going to happen, if the experience will be very challenging, if it will be very healing. Most people say it changed their life, but can't say you're always going to have that kind of a vertical or a transpersonal experience.
So when you've had people come in, maybe you can talk about some of the experiences people have had, both what felt negative in the moment, but maybe was actually just pushing out of their comfort zone or evolving further. What does a negative experience look like, if you could call it that?
So we talked about that ego structure kind of dissolving, and because it was a defensive structure, was there to keep out of our awareness feelings, memories, shadow aspects of ourselves, instincts that are too intense, right? And so when we live from this sense of our identity, we're sort of fragmented. One of the things from a psychological perspective happens is that unconscious material comes up into consciousness, good and bad, in the sense that what's in the unconscious, it's just like the hero traveling outside the kingdom has to go into the unknown to find the treasure. And there's always a dragon there, you know, because before the treasure, we meet the dragon, which is all of that shadow stuff, which can be memories of trauma that you kind of knew about, but maybe they surface more clearly. It can be just a lot of feelings. It can be your anxiety personified that you have to meet in the darkness. You know, that's Carl Jung, father of modern psychology, said what we most need to find lives where we most don't look. Why would we need to find that stuff? Well, to bring it up for healing. So back to the neuroscience, one of the things that the psilocybin does is calm the amygdala, which is a big part of our experience of fear. And so that increases what we call the window of tolerance, that we're able to actually look at these experiences in our past and tolerate them. We're able to revisit trauma and process it. Something in us knows how to process it and helps us get different insights. We're able to revisit relationships and see what we appreciate about them. We're able to look at fear without the same kind of fear response. So it really does provide people a way to do what we hope to do in talk therapy a lot more efficiently, let's say, because of the way we transcend time, we can see the past and future, and also because the way it calms and helps us look at something from that emergent property or insight, we can look at something from a different level almost and make more sense of it, make more meaning of it.
That's interesting that it actually affects the amygdala, the fight or flight response, so that you can handle it. So it's not necessarily a bad thing, even if someone isn't comfortable during the session at a certain point, or it's scary or something to them. It's more dealing with it so you can release it and evolve past it. Is that right?
There's a whole kind of preparation phase of this process, and we really do try to help people prepare for what could come up and also any kind of transient physiological side effects. So we're hoping that when you get in the room, you're as prepared as possible. And we never know what's going to happen for people. It's very individual, but you're as prepared as possible for what could happen and how to ground yourself and deal with challenging experiences, use your breath and meditative awareness to bring your energy down. Your body knows what it needs and what it's doing. And I always encourage people to kind of welcome all the experiences and move through them. And that these waves come and they go and they come and they go. I often see a kind of an experience where it's like people have a book of their life or something, and they'll open a chapter and they'll see something in a different way, and they might articulate an insight that they have about their parent or something that happened to them. And then they kind of go back in for a while and they'll open another chapter and do some healing about that. I feel like these chapters get open. You know, again, not everybody, but that's quite a common experience when it's clearly a therapeutic experience.
Do you find it's chronological or the biggest thing shows up first?
Oh, I couldn't say for sure. Yeah, That's an interesting question, though.
So there's layers and they just kind of come in and out of these different layers.
Yeah, and then all of that might wind up into a tapestry that gives a person a sense of purpose or meaning. One woman, she said, I could share this example. She had this beautiful experience that sort of wound up into this tapestry of a web of women in her life. And she saw this beautiful vision of all these women kind of collecting and moving with her. And so there's both the symbolic meaning of that. What does that mean for her own feminine energy, for her life history, for her connection to her heritage? But then there's also this literal way that, you know, she's meeting other women now here and there. And she said, I know they're part of my web. They just kind of light up in this way. And a lot of people describe that kind of magic. That's what William James called the mystical experience, ineffable. It's very difficult to describe some of these more magical types of phenomenon, but you know, everybody's got their stories of how things come to fruition, both before and after the journey. They have other stories where people tell these remarkable stories on their way to Oregon, you know, and one pair, they got up in the morning before coming and partner looked out the window and there were morel mushrooms growing in their garden box and had lived there 25 years and never, ever had a mushroom grow there. And this sort of magical experience, they felt that really underlined the journey they were about to take to come to Oregon so the one partner could do the work.
So would you say the journey begins as soon as you ingest the psilocybin, or you're saying it begins as soon as you make a decision that you're going to do it?
You know, a lot of people say that the journey starts when you decide. Folks start noticing things around them in a different way, paying attention to the natural world in a different way. Oftentimes when we start our preparation, we'll have people speak to the intentions they have for the journey, which is an important part of preparation. A lot of times their intentions have changed by the time they actually get into the room a few weeks later because of this. Oh, I'm already feeling less anxious about this thing. And, you know, so now their intentions have expanded a little bit, say.
So how specific are the intentions people are setting? I mean, is it in general, like, I want to have a life with less anxiety or something like that? Or is it more specific, like they want to heal a relationship with a particular person?
I want more joy in my life and to clear the obstacles to that, which I experience as depression or anxiety, or something I've often used is, what do I need to know, do, or heal to fulfill my intention, to know my purpose in this life, or to have more joy in this existence, or something like that. There's no one thing, but we try to help people shape something so they have a sense of focus in some sense. Again, not that you get what you want all the time, but there's this notion in the psychedelic research of set and setting, that just doing psychedelics is not necessarily healing, but when you do it in the right setting. So part of that is facilitated, it's safe, it's held, you can relax, you're prepared, it's comfortable, you're going inward with music, like the whole setting is set up for you, but also the set, which has to do with kind of your mindset going into it, and that you have spent some time honing your intentions, preparing yourself, preparing your body, preparing your heart, dealing with any fears you might have about the scenario, so that when you get in the room, all parts of you are on board and you're not fighting with yourself to enter into the medicine. Also learning about how the day will unfold, what potential side effects, all of that is getting that mindset or the set and setting prepared to make the journey as supportive as possible.
So a stronger outcome. I mean, if you did it recreationally, it might be interesting, it might be fun type of thing, but
bad. I go really bad too.
Or really bad, yeah.
Because you don't have the set and setting. Look, I'm not an expert in all these things, but I read that it has a lot to do with having all this energy up here, like you're awake, you're aware, your analytical mind is engaged, maybe you're fighting the experience, you have a lot of stimulation from people. And we try to get most people down here, breathing in the body, trusting the connectivity that the psilocybin is doing inside you to find what needs to be healed, just like the mushrooms do in the forest. They do remarkable things to rejuvenate the soil and connect the forest and bring life to the forest in general.
Yeah. Well, so what are some transformations you've seen in your own office with people? And also, does it occur immediately after the session, or is it like over the next few weeks that they get new insights? How does that work?
Just also to be clear, I don't necessarily have an office. We're in the psilocybin service facilitators. We work out of service centers. Even then, we're independent contractors. So legally, that's where we do the actual administration. We can do some of the preparation on telehealth and then the integration session afterward. But anyway, your question is a good one. And yes, people have some immediate insights and revelations, even though they're maybe worn out after six or whatever many hours they've been in this process. But that process of integration, making sense of the experience, can unfold for weeks, months, years. You know, I personally have had experiences that I only made sense of a year later, because in some sense, it's the psyche communicates in symbols and images, just like when you're dreaming. Sometimes it's literal. People talk to their ancestors they really felt were in the room, you know, but a lot of times it's symbolic. You get an image of a place that you were many, many years ago, and you don't know quite what is the significance of that place. And I thought I had to move there, when in fact, it was showing me a pattern or something like that. So those insights can evolve over time, for sure. We encourage people to do integration work. And yes, it can fold over time. It's like the gift that keeps on giving in that respect. Although there are immediate impacts, and there are impacts in the brain as well, and mood, that seem to happen fairly quickly if you look at the research.
Well, I'm curious about maybe some transformations that happen right after the process, like while they were still with you after the session. Have you seen transformations, or have people talked about it?
Well, yeah, certainly insights and revelation. And they're also kind of tired, you know. It's, let's say we finished at 6 p.m. or something, 5 p.m., and then meet again the next morning. And they're still really getting themselves back together and making sense of things. But people do have profound stories that they share about things they realized, or people they saw, or transpersonal experiences they've had. I've had a few people say, well, there was kind of the me that existed before this experience and the me that existed after. And what that means to them is ineffable, that it has this noetic quality, like there's some insight, something new, something emergent came from chaos, right? That's the pattern of the journey. And so it's a bit like, again, like the hero's journey, that there's treasure that the hero lifts from the unknown, from the void, which kind of symbolizes the insight and the immediate experience. But then the hero uses that treasure, it goes back into the community to transform the kingdom. So that's part of what helps us unfold further meaning from the experience, is making it real in our life. I'm not really answering your question because it's so different for everybody, but here's something I can say, is that most people, the aha, one of the main ahas, is there's this wise part of them. They remembered some aspect of who they actually are that guided the journey. Like, who did that? I'm not guiding the journey, supporting them in a variety of ways, but I'm not guiding anything. It's what emerges inside the person. And there is this sense that they're going somewhere. There's something about them is revealing something. And that could be personified by a divine figure, but quite often it's this sense of just knowing that arrives in themselves.
Yeah.
Like, instead of thinking through things, they just know stuff. I had a woman who she knew exactly what music to put on and was just kind of curating her own playlist, which usually I kind of do that. And it's just a miracle for her. It just totally supported her experience, some wise part. But if you go back into your life and you go back to work and the kids need this and that, you can easily get disconnected. So that all that stuff in the unconscious, we encounter the dragon, but we lift the treasure, which has to do with this way that we become more whole. We become more connected or coherent or congruent with a part of ourselves that is deeper, that knows, let's say. And so we try to encourage people to continue to develop that relationship with their inner life by dropping back into some kind of meditative experience, putting on the music, putting on the blindfold, going back, and just remembering that this wisdom exists within you and that you know what you need to heal.
Yeah.
I think that's a common revelation that's fairly quick after the journey.
Yeah, I think that's true. Even with the deep meditation, when you get into that practice, that you do all have this information within you. Like, it's always there, but it's just a matter of tapping into it or raising your vibration to reach it or something like that. So maybe we can talk about the actual experience. You mentioned earlier, as far as how long it takes, I think you said about 6 hours, or does that vary, or is it typically a certain amount of time?
Yeah, it varies depending on what the dose is that people end up taking. So there are rules and regulations about everything. The Oregon Health Authority is very explicit about how we handle absolutely everything, for good reason. And so there are rules about how long one should stay, has to stay at the service center, depending on the dose. So if you're taking 25 milligrams of psilocin, which again is the active ingredient that's after the psilocybin is broken down, then it's 5 hours from that time. If you're taking 35 to 50, which is the max milligrams, then it's 6 hours from that time. And I say from that time, because often what people do is they've settled on a dose that they're starting with 25 milligrams, let's say, but they're not sure if that's going to be enough. So there's this opportunity that Oregon has provided for this, what's called a secondary dose. So if an hour in, they're not really feeling it in some way that's clear to them, then they can elect this secondary dose. So if that secondary dose takes them to 35 or over, then it's 6 hours from there. But they might have already been there for, you know, 2 hours by then, which is unusual, but maybe an hour and a half or something. So then you're there 8.5 hours, you know, so that it really varies. But, you know, you're devoting your whole day certainly to this process.
Yeah. Well, how does someone approach it when they come in the office? Are they laying down? Do people walk around? Or are they always with a mask on and quiet and still?
For the most part, the idea is that the real benefit comes from an inner journey. And although the hero's journey is a story about a hero going to different lands, it actually was always meant as a metaphor for the inner journey. Nevertheless, I give my clients the opportunity to visit the center the afternoon before, get comfortable with the space, accomplish whatever payment details they still need to do so that the next morning when they come for the journey, we might check in with all the intelligence centers, our head, our heart, our body, and see what's going on. Make sure people feel ready, restate intentions. And then we call in Brian or Michelle. Brian and Michelle Lee are the owners, operators, and they're just incredible people doing this kind of as a calling and really have a passion for helping people with this work. And so one of them come in with the psilocybin, and it's like a beautiful kind of tea ceremony, you know, where the client then kind of opens the packages and participates in the making of it. And part of that is just so they know that it's coming from a sealed package. Actually, the dried mushrooms are there, and they'll put them in a grinder and grind them up and either make a tea or we call lemon tech, which is a denser preparation, but still the ground mushrooms with lemon. Or they can just eat the dried mushrooms, dip it in honey, or they can take it in a capsule as well. So that's a little bit of a ceremonial process in some sense. A lot of people like to take time to connect with the mushroom and remember that it's a living thing, that they're connecting them with the natural world and with this kind of intelligent pattern of creation we've been talking about. This cycle of birth, death, and renewal is an ongoing pattern that we're now entering into our own journey of that cycle. And then typically people lay down, there's a curated kind of musical playlist to help them through the process. And they'll often wear a blindfold just to cut out stimulation. And within a half an hour or something, the medicine starts coming on. Now, that said, there are people who don't want anything on their face, or they want to put a scarf on, or they don't want anything on. There are people who don't want the music on. You know, it's basically your day. So while there are some kind of best practices we suggest or start with, it really is for the person to create. So from there, you know, things unfold. We actually do have a really beautiful atrium at Omnia where the outdoors is indoors. There's an atrium filled with plants and a little deck, and you can sit out there. And a lot of times people will want to go sit out there either at the beginning or towards the end when they're coming out with the medicine. But for the most part, you're not walking and talking.
Do you find that people talk out loud during the experience and you're taking notes, or how does that work?
It really varies. Everything from, you know, 12 pages of notes to a quarter page. I'll offer to write things down for folks if they want to remember stuff. And it just depends on the person. Some people don't even want the notes back because, look, I had my experience. I went through some hard things. I know where I am now, and that's enough for me. So, again, everybody's different. Sometimes encourage people to journal a little bit right afterward. You don't always feel like talking. And just like when you wake up from a dream, there's bits and pieces that might float away a little bit, although the significant stuff certainly seems to be quite embedded.
Yeah. Well, what about staying hydrated, or is there any eating, or it's just 8 hours you're, you know, laying there except to get up for maybe and use the restroom?
I don't want to scare you.
Or 6 hours or 5 hours, whatever.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, you'd be surprised. First of all, it doesn't feel that long. People are like, what? It's 5 o'clock. And no, they're not hungry. And, you know, we don't encourage much of any eating in the morning because people can get nauseated or something, maybe a dry toast with your coffee or something like that. But yeah, no, I mean, people can bring stuff if they're worried. I always ask them, just bring a bar or something. It'll be available if you need it. Always have a water bottle. And so, yeah, you can drink, you can actually get up and use the restroom. So,
yeah,
you know, but there are periods of time where you're deeper in it and periods of time where you surface a little bit and you might go back in. It kind of has this cyclical feel to it.
Do people typically experience similar things as far as, like, say, vibrant colors or things moving that shouldn't be moving normally?
If you have your eyes open, certainly there's going to be perceptual changes. It's almost like the essence of things become revealed to you. Like the water is sparkling, or, you know, someone may say, that is the most beautiful carpet I have ever seen. Aldous Huxley wrote a book while he was on mushrooms called The Doors of Perception. It's a little book. I read it while I was a graduate student. I was very fascinated in non-ordinary states of consciousness. So they talk about cleansing the doors of perception, that in some way our ego, that default mode network and our ego structure, is like a funnel. It takes all of the kind of blooming, buzzing, confusion, all that energy and information of the unified field. We're just energy, and that you don't have to get very far in quantum physics to understand that. But it takes all of that, our default mode network, our ego structure now, our personality, takes all of that and creates this sort of funnel. And this is all that we perceive. And we tend to perceive the same things over and over. We have the same thoughts. We have the same feelings. We create the same experiences for ourselves. So we get in these ruts that get embedded in our brain and biology. And so the medicines open the doors of perception. So that means not only do I see myself in different ways, but I actually see reality more as it is.
Yeah. That's interesting to think you're seeing actual reality, what things are actually made of other than our perception.
Mm.
Well, so is there any contraindication, anyone who should not be doing this?
Oh, sure. Yes. So at this point, you know, it's not recommended for people who have a history of bipolar disorder or schizophrenia. It's not recommended for people on lithium. It can cause really bad serotonin syndrome. Some heart conditions are not necessarily recommended for that. We're not a medical facility. We do ask the questions and there are some very clear contraindications. But if people are wondering, we'll often connect them with a medical provider that knows a lot about their medications that they're on, as well as psilocybin. A lot of times people are already on SSRIs and other things that have to be taken into account. That doesn't discourage participation, but it might affect their dosing. We try to help them get all the information that they need to make those decisions about how to be safe in the process.
That's great that you have that connection to a doctor that can help mm-hmm. them decide. What about the cost? Now, who are you paying? I know you're paying for three different things, right?
The facilitator is independent contractor, so that's a separate thing. And most of them, everybody has kind of a sliding scale, but it might be somewhere between $1,225, depending on the person and how many hours they put in. And then we'll come back to sliding scale and opportunities for no cost or low cost services. The second component is the service center, not just the room rental, but everything else that goes into it. They provide the product and there's all sorts of details around what they do with that and storing it and accessing it and make sure it's good quality and all that. So that's a separate chunk. And then you pay for the psilocybin itself just separately. That goes to the service center as well. And so what does that add up to? $2,500, let's say, or more. And so it's a big investment. If you consider how much you've been paying for therapy for the year, it's really maybe not. We can get into a broader conversation about the cost of mental health care and what psychologists and psychiatrists charge per hour. You know, we should be talking about all of these things, but
yeah,
now insurance doesn't cover this. So more is coming out of the person's pocket.
Yeah, a psychiatrist or psychologist, okay. If you're going once a week or something, I'm sure that adds up very quickly surpasses the cost of this. Yeah.
Right. And well, this maybe doesn't replace those things, but for some people that have tried those and they haven't worked for them, it's worth it. Another way that people reduce cost is doing a group program, and we can take up to 8 people in our large group room. That's with 2 facilitators, sometimes 3. And then some of the facilitators are putting together themed groups, a women's group or a group for entrepreneurs. And they've done quite a few end of life retreat groups. I think I didn't mention it before, but an application on psilocybin that has gotten a lot of attention is its use for helping people with end of life diagnosis deal with some of the anxiety of that. And so we've had a number of groups through the center and then the veterans program.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So many applications.
We do have plans in place for what we call a social equity plan, for how we're going to make some services available at low cost for people. So sliding scales. We have a project where we are raising money to provide services for veterans at reduced costs or no cost. It's called the Hearing Hands Consortium or something like that. I don't quite have the name right. But it is to allow veterans to do this work, which they have high levels of PTSD and traumatic brain injury, moral injury, and just kind of trouble integrating. One of our facilitators is a veteran as well. So it's a population that we are trying hard to access and make services available. But in general, there's a certain number of people per month that we can take for reduced costs. So we're trying our best, you know, to make services available, but I think it's a much bigger and broader conversation about mental health care in this country that should be had related to this topic.
Well, I don't know if you've had any vets come to you directly and if you've seen a big change as far as traumatic, either brain injury or PTSD.
I personally haven't yet. We're all kind of new to legal services here, but a number of people have.
One thing I did want to talk about, the integration process. So the day after, you said you help people integrate the experience. What does that look like?
So the day after, you know, integration is a process, let's say, that can go on for a while, and it can talk about the way I think about it, three different levels. But the short-term integration is more just kind of reconnecting, maybe telling more of the story that they want to tell so that it helps them make meaning of it as they retell it. We're also helping them think about, what about this next week? You know, what is it that you need to take care of yourself, make a little extra time for reflection, maybe go a little slower. Often recommend people make time to drop back into the experience with the music and just kind of remember things and continue to journal about it and things like that. So that's kind of that first part, is making sense of the experience. We also have a once a month, the first Thursday of every month, we have a free drop-in integration group where people can drop in and Zoom and share with each other. And the folks that have come for that are really, really appreciating the opportunity to share with other people who've been through it, because you kind of go home and you're like, nobody gets it. You know, a lot of people haven't told their family or the ones they don't live with necessarily, because not everybody understands the healing potential and the research that's been done and kind of the legitimacy of it. And so some people don't have anyone to talk to about it. So we have those integration circles. And part of that is just being able to tell your story a little bit. And the more we share it, the more insights occur to us, the more we journal about it. So there's integration of the experience itself. And then there's integration of what I was talking about before, about this kind of wise part of you that, I mean, healing, health is wholeness, right? The same root word for health and whole are the same, and holy is the same. So the more that we can become more integrated within ourselves, less fragmented, when we come into this, our minds and our hearts are at odds, or our minds and our body don't listen to each other, you know, so the more we bring up that stuff from the unconscious, the more we integrate the psyche, right? And so this process of integrating the psyche and becoming more whole is a lifelong process. Carl Jung called it individuation. And so I think that's an ongoing process of beginning to listen to oneself, beginning to value what the unconscious offers up, to validate your own emotional experience, for example, and then learn to take care of yourself, building on those insights, allowing yourself to reconnect with the wisdom that you encountered more often, making specific time for that. So that process of integrating the psyche, integrating our life, that's another place that I encourage people to think about what they're doing to become more integrated. And then the third component of integration that I think is valuable is then, how do I take both of those things and bring them to life in my day-to-day experience, right? So if I had a new belief about myself that was more compassionate, more supportive, or I had a new understanding of a relationship, how do I make sure when the old thoughts come up that I'm remembering and reaccessing the new thoughts or the new feelings? And being human, we can get back in our lives and some of the old patterns can sneak in a little bit. So I try to help people be aware and be more on purpose with catching those and being able to access the insights that they had and bring them to life.
Well, that sounds like an important part of the process, the integration afterward, yeah. Just to make sure those connections are able to form more strongly.
Right. So you're absolutely right about that deliberate practice of a new thing. Now, this isn't specific to what we're talking about right now. Isn't specific to psilocybin, of course. Like any insight you've had in therapy and meditation and ecstatic dance or whatever it is, that's why the hero comes back with the treasure, has to bring it into the world and share it with the world in order to transform the kingdom, the whole psyche, right? To be able to kind of live the experience. It's not enough to just have a transcendent experience if it doesn't change the way you show up and interact and treat yourself and treat others. A lot of people that do these substances recreationally, it seems to kind of end up chasing the high, like thinking the whole point is to have that mystical or transcendent experience, that experience of the wise part of them coming in. We need to learn to access that wisdom and become more integrated in our lives in order to really embed learning. And that takes back into the world with some different ways of operating, different ways, not just of behaving, like I'm going to eat better. It's really just, it's different ways of thinking and feeling about myself, about other people, about the world, feeling a part of things again, like making sure that we're bringing that to fruition is a way to keep the gift giving, let's say, the gift of the experience that you invested in.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like it's very well put together, the program there in Oregon and at the Omnia Group. So how can people, if they are interested in this, where can they go to find out more information and maybe schedule a session? Where can they find you if they want to work with you?
Right. The easiest thing is to just go to the website, omniagroupashland.com. I'm one of the facilitators listed there. It's on under our team. There's about 12 or so by now, and everyone's great. You know, I think who's the right person for you is the one that you resonate. Like you go, that's my person. They always offer people an introductory conversation. Some people want to talk to more than one person because it's important that you feel comfortable with this person you're going to be sharing a good bit of your life with. You're sharing this deep experience. And so, yeah, that choice is an important one. So Omnia Group Ashland, and then you certainly go through them to find me. I also have a website, www.jumpingcurves.com. I do other things besides this is a fairly new thing. And so you'll see a little bit more about who I am and what I do on that website, but that's a way to contact me. People can also go to the website or contact me if they're interested in supporting some of the social equity work or contributing to the work, the fundraising that we're doing for veterans and things like that. So if you're not sure you want to do it yourself, but you think this sounds helpful for people who are struggling with mental health and health disorders, you can also participate that way too.
Well, that's perfect. And I'll put that in the show notes as well. Thank you for this enlightening conversation. I think it's really fascinating. And I'm glad it is getting out there and getting approved for people like yourself to facilitate these sessions, because I think it can be really helpful. It sounds like for, especially like you said, deep depression and PTSD and anxiety. Well, you listed a whole bunch of things.
It's still experimental treatment. So we try to temper people's expectations because you don't really know what you're going to get. But for the most part, people have, even the challenging experiences tend to be healing in some way. But in terms of the research, it's still under study. You know, it is in phase 3 clinical trials, psilocybin, and people are talking about the future of it at this point, being approved for medical therapeutic uses like MDMA. Ketamine's already legal. It's a very different experience, but it's under ongoing investigation. I try to temper people's expectations and also share enough to give folks hope about what could be.
Be sure and follow Open Minded Healing so you'll get every new episode as soon as it's released each Tuesday. You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.